Good morning. Good morning. Thanks so much for coming. You are at the panel called Accessible Rich Media. We're here to talk about accessibility in the context of all these great, highly interactive applications that everybody wants to use and and should be able to use. So my name is Sharon Rush, and I work with an organization called Nobility. We spell it with a K. And just in the shameless plug department, we have a booth on the trade show floor, and we'd love for all of you to come by. We run an event every year in conjunction with South by Southwest called the Accessibility Internet Rally. We invite developers to create highly interactive websites that are then judged for design and for accessibility. And we have the People's Choice Award, so you can go by the Nobility booth and vote for who you think are the best among them. And they are some really, really good sites this year. Eight developer teams made websites for arts and musician organizations. So please do go by the Nobility booth and check that out. And in the meantime, I'm very lucky to have here with me to talk about this important issue of the accessibility of rich media. We have Susan Gerhart, who, and each of them will tell you more about themselves, but Susan Gerhart is a software engineer who's progressively becoming more visually impaired. So she's going to talk to you about what that experience has been for someone who's very highly skilled in the technology arena to have the tools moving farther and farther out of her reach. We have Lisa Pappas from SAS, who's active on the W3C Education and Outreach Working Group and is helping to develop the ARIA standards that are helping as we move toward accessible rich media to help set some standards. And then we have Becky Gibson from IBM, who's actually implementing those and is going to show you some of the tools and some of the work that she's been doing, which I saw last year at CSUN, and it's really, really exciting work. So I think we're going to have a great time. And with that, I'm going to just make another comment about the fact that I mentioned that Susan uses her technology tools so familiarly and so well. And I wanted to show you also, you know, the idea that you have to dumb down media in order to make it accessible is really so wrong and so fallacious. And one of the exciting things to me to be watching is how people with disabilities find and use and adapt technology. And one of the things I've really watched carefully is this campaign from Gallaudet University, where Gallaudet is a university that trains people who are deaf in, you know, you get a Bachelor of Arts in all kinds of,
It didn't refresh.
So I can see it on my screen, but y'all can't see it. All right, well, maybe I'll show this later, but it's a YouTube series of videos from Gallaudet where people who are deaf use YouTube to communicate with each other in their native language, which is sign language. And it's a whole series of videos where they're talking about a controversy on their campus, faculty and students and staff. And it's just one example for me of the ways that people with disabilities can use technology and some of the ways in which these multimedia and these accessible, rich media tools are tremendously valuable to people with disabilities as well as to the rest of the folks. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Susan and let Susan tell you more about her background, her experience, and some of the frustrations that she has in using rich media now.
Okay, mic on here.
So you can.
Okay, I'm had a career programming since 1961, and have worked at MCC and many other places as a software engineering researcher and a manager. I've had myopic degeneration my whole life.
Can you hear her?
Okay, I've had myopic degeneration my whole life, and I've been legally blind for a couple of years. Now, I managed to time this pretty well so that I stopped driving just when I had a teenager to start driving me around, and I couldn't see his driving mistakes. So Another thing that happened fortuitously was that podcasting came along. And almost all I know about accessibility, I've learned from podcasts and from blogs. If you go to Blind Cool Tech or ACB Radio, or if you go to Podzinger and you do searches on screen readers and topics like that, you'll find that there are thousands of podcasts of people demonstrating tools that work for blind people and are usually free. So Sharon mentioned YouTube. I found a YouTube to MP3 converter described, I believe, on Blind Cool Tech. So now I move my MP3 files, excuse me, off to a device like this, which is a book port from American Publishing House for the Blind. I've got 500 books on here. I'd rather have my content moved to where I can move around and use it. It's self-voicing. And I think that's an important point, that text-to-speech, the speech that I use, is much more than just screen readers. Long before I started using a screen reader, I used a product called Text Aloud, which is a desktop application. It runs as a toolbar in Explorer and in Firefox. And you could select a copy, select a part of a page and have it read to you. You could copy text to the clipboard and have it automatically read. You can buy voices for about $30 a piece, so you can build up your voice repertoire until you find what you want. And that's all before getting into having a screen reader. So text-to-speech also comes in terms of mobile devices that have browsers in them, that have RSS clients. And one of the things I've been trying to do in the blog that I write, which is called As Your World Changes, it's a WordPress blog, asyourworldchanges.wordpress.com, is to describe technology like this, primarily for people, baby boomers coming along, who are going to be aging, who are tech savvy, but they need to make that move into a different type of way of using their computer. And not a step down, but at least a step over, which takes a lot of work. And in fact, in many cases, it's a step up, because if you belong to organizations like Bookshare, you have extraordinarily available books and news resources. So one of the biggest problems that I have, and I don't know how to convey this, is that it's not that there's any single technical thing that makes using the web hard. It's the total effort that goes in. It's as if you have a battery that, you know, just goes down. Everything that might be trivial to a sighted person may take 5, 10, 15, 100 times as much effort. And you simply cannot sustain that level of effort without making some critical mistakes and without, you know, simply giving up. So every link on a page, everything that is extraneous is and is in the way may be causing somebody to give up.
And if you guys want to share Susan's pain, she's recorded a narrative of herself going and trying to buy a book from Amazon, do some chores on Fidelity, and the audio file is posted on her blog on the A Potter.
It'll be there soon. Okay. So there are many of these fairly trivial problems that are now well known to accessibility people. The click here phenomenon that is simply a waste of time and an indication that people have not done their homework in listening to their pages. The lack of headings. And I'm going to demonstrate some of the good and bad parts of that in a moment here on an example. The a couple of other things that are problematic, and this is something that's very easily fixed, is, you know, you've got a blog, and there's the blog rule and the archives and all that information. If that comes before the content, before the postings, it makes the blog almost unusable. All it is a switch in a template choice somewhere, and it makes all the difference in the world in terms of how it comes down in the RSS client and how it's read. So that's one more piece of advice I would give, is make sure that your content comes as early as it can for screen reader order. Now, when it comes to screen readers, I didn't go for JAWS. I didn't go for Windows Eyes. I went for NVDA, which stands for Non-Visual Desktop Access, from nvaccess.org. It's free.
Complete test dialog. A thread was found during the scan window. List cookies txt. List item selected. Result infection. Tracking cookie tribal fusion. Path. Mozilla 64. C. Documents and settings. Okay. Susan application data. Mozilla Firefox PR 11 of 11. Scan. Automatic.
I think it thought that you were introducing it. And so it
was. And that makes one of my other points, which is that the web is a very dangerous neighborhood for blind people. That there are all these threats, and if the threats don't get you, your antivirus software will. Updating all those things. Okay, so I chose to go with an open source screen reader because I believe, first of all, it was capable, and it's an excellent piece of software. It's growing very rapidly and is going to make a big change, not just for people like me who are off the rehab grid. If you're not a veteran, if you don't have a job, if you don't want a job, nobody gives you screen readers or vouchers for screen readers. You buy your own equipment. So you have to decide where you want to put the money. So keep in mind that, first of all, there's a free screen reader that makes it impossible to have the excuse that you couldn't use a screen reader to listen to your page, but also that people are going to be using things, I think, increasingly like NVDA and more open source and a greater variety of text-to-speech tools. Well, I think that's about enough for the problems now. Let's see if I can get rid of...
Now you can show it. Yeah, it went away.
Okay. Okay, so
blank.
In a minute, we're waiting for your screen to. She was one. Yeah, I'm two. That's what I thought. Okay. We'll go back to the list.
Internet radio, citizen broadcasting, social media podcasts, blog talk radio.
Can we do a function F8 to throw it up there? Let's see.
Go ahead.
Well, let's just listen to it, and we'll all share
it. That misses part of the experience.
Blank.
I have an idea. How about if... I think it's plugged in. It's plugged in. Blog Talk.
Oh, yeah. What's the URL? I can put it up on mine.
It's yeah, it's not the same as she goes through.
Do you want to just use yours?
Yes, I'm going to use mine, but... yeah, let's just...
Okay. Link, citizen broadcasting, blog talk radio.
Okay, do we have anything up there yet?
Keep working on it.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to have audio and video one way or the other.
But it's not
okay. Well, let me tell you the story of Blog Talk Radio, which is a new service that goes along with for bloggers and podcasters to give them an interactive place to go. So you actually call into a phone number, and then you can have a discussion. And there's a client which is intended to be a text interactive chat. Well, there was a podcast that I really like by a psychologist, and he announced he was going to have an interactive session. I went to Blog Talk Radio, and I wandered around the site, and I registered, and I went back to to 6 o'clock Sunday, which is when the event was supposed to occur. I couldn't find out how to get into that chat room. I couldn't find the play button. I finally got in, and then the client was inaccessible. And it really gave me a very different feeling about that person who had chosen that particular content management system, that particular support infrastructure. There are accessible chat rooms. If you go to accessibleworld.com, you'll find blind people having discussions all the time for training, book clubs. There are accessible tools for text chat. All right, are we ready to do something here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Visited link, create account.
So let's suppose I go back to Blog Talk Radio, and I'm trying to look for a new podcast that I might want to subscribe to. I've got a big variety of podcasts, but I want to see if there's a new one. I'm just going to explore around the page. I have no idea what's on that page. So I'm going to go through, do some headings.
H, heading 2, featured. H, heading 4, link, hot shots. H, heading 4, link, podcast 02.
It's pretty hard to hear with the audio on this, but...
H, heading 4, link, walk for a cure. H, heading 4, link, car challenge.
So headings are the same as links.
H, heading 4, link, kids chat.
Let's go to there just to see what...
Kids chat. Kids chat. Blog Talk Radio Mozilla Firefox application. Gecko virtual Bofor Mozilla document. Busy, 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 busy. Loading document, kids chat, Blog Talk Radio, done, kids chat, Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, so I guess now I'm on a particular podcast.
Blank.
When I went to the podcast I was referring to before, some playing, an audio came on, playing from a previous podcast, which drowned out my screen reader. That didn't happen in
Blink, Citizen Broadcasting, Blog Talk Radio, visited link, create account. Username.
Okay, creating an account and logging in. I'm never sure exactly whether I should register on a site, what exactly the benefits are, but I know that there's always a login box in there somewhere that you have to traverse.
Edit blank.
Password. Protected edit blank.
H, heading 1, visited link, kids chat.
Now my audio is going.
K, link, kids chat.
I don't know what happened there.
They turned it
K,
down.
K, link, kids
oh,
chat.
They turned it down, okay.
No, you can't hear.
I thought I was going deaf, too.
K, list with 5 items, bullet link, fly show.
Okay.
Fly show, busy. Busy, busy, busy. Loading document, blog talk rate, done. Blog talk radio, fly lady, fly show.
Blog talk radio. This broadcast will begin just after this brief message.
You may be sitting there right now, wondering how you're going to make it through the day.
Busy, busy, busy. Loading document, kids chat, blog talk radio.
Did I open a new window?
Done. Kids chat, blog talk radio.
Her video stuff works.
Okay.
Okay, link, citizen broadcasting, blog talk radio.
Okay, so at this point, I'm going to abort this because we've got enough technical difficulties. The point is that as I went to this site, and you can look at it, it's a nice site in many ways. It has a lot of links around. I don't think it has an accessibility statement, but there were two levels of disappointment that occurred when I came to this site. One is the sheer complexity of getting around there and trying to figure out with different podcasts, different feeds, different things going on. It was simply very overwhelming. And that changed my feelings about the person who had put out the podcast, that kind of lost a fan there, because this was such a hard site for me to use. And I don't know if it's ever going to improve.
And okay. So from that, we would go and talk to Lisa about the business, you know, businesses who are interested in customers like Susan, millions of other people with disabilities who are struggling with but trying to use this technology and make the most of it. And so Lisa's going to talk about the industry perspective and what business is doing now to try to improve the use of standards and to spread the word about the fact that accessibility is a good thing for business to do, too.
As Susan said, I'm representing industry. I work for SAS Institute, which is the world's largest privately held software company. It's a .com that behaves a lot like a .org. And what I'd like to talk first about is what are some of the reasons that would compel a business to produce accessible software? The one we're most aware of has to do with compliance. We sell to the federal government. The federal government buys a lot of software, and accessibility compliance with Section 508 law is a weighting factor in procurement. If you sell in Canada, in the EU, and increasingly to public sector areas such as universities, then you're required to meet W3C web content accessibility guidelines. And that directly affects competitiveness. We have seen where we couldn't prove that software passed the W3C HTML validator. Now, this was not a question of whether it was accessible or not, but whether or not it passed an automated tool had to do with whether or not a sale could proceed in Canada. So it is very definitely a factor in competitiveness. Now, because the techniques that we use to produce accessible software means following the standards, following the specifications, accessible software by its nature is more consistent in its user interaction and tends to be more of a higher quality and easier to use, not just for people with disabilities, but for everyone. The aspect of accessibility that I think is least recognized is the market share impact. One in three households in the U.S. has a member of a family with a disability. 20% of working age adults have some sort of disability. Now, that number may really surprise you, but you have to remember that I don't look disabled, but I'm hard of hearing. And there are many things like that, cognitive disabilities and so forth, that we don't immediately see. But if you remember from what Susan said, she went to a site, she was discouraged, she's highly unlikely to go back there. Well, if you're in e-commerce, that's not what you want to hear. So not only is this a large market, but also if you meet the needs of that market, then people are much more likely to come back and to stay with you as a vendor. One big factor that's also driving this need for accessibility has to do with the convergence of some demographic factors. Across the world, life expectancy is rising. We also see the age at retirement rising in industrialized nations. Well, as we get older, our ability to see, our ability to manipulate a mouse and so forth starts to decrease. So with that increased incidence of disability and people retiring later, we've got more people in the office who have a disability who need special accommodations. Again, as I said, I work for SAS. In the last 20 years, we've seen the average age of employee rise 10 years. Well, that's not such a big deal until you factor that in, that pushed us over 40. And the number of ergonomic requests and accessibility software that's been requested goes up. We have to protect that domain knowledge and keep people from going out the door. Now, can internet applications be both dynamic and accessible? Ajax is fabulous. I mean, I'm girl geek, I'll admit it. But while Ajax provides dynamic web content and mechanisms for rich internet-based applications,
what we've got here is failure to communicate.
I told you I was hard of hearing. Even I heard that one. The problem with Ajax is that many screen readers are unaware of the updates. So with Ajax, we can do a regional update. We don't have to go and fetch everything from the server back to the page. However, the way screen readers work, they may have to start rereading the entire page rather than going back to just where an update happened, if in fact they know that that update happened. In addition, dynamic web applications may have erratic keyboard navigation, or it may be incomplete. There's whole sections you just cannot get to. And this is where the W3C's Way ARIA comes in. That's the Web Accessibility Initiative, Accessible Rich Internet Applications. Way ARIA provides a syntax for coding dynamic accessible web applications. It is currently supported in Firefox and has been announced to be supported in IE8.
That announcement just came out yesterday, y'all, and there were victory dances all over the country as a result, I think.
It's kind of sad. I really was dancing in my office. Somebody wanted to know what I had in my coffee. But the fact is, part of what we get with ARIA is a predictable set of navigation. We're trying to make our web applications behave like desktop applications, so it reduces the learning curve. So if as a company we've done our work and we believe that we've done our coding to make our software accessible, what can we do to validate that accessibility? The very, very, very short list is, first and foremost, can you do everything with a keyboard without a mouse? Is there device independence? And part of why you have to start there is that the assistive technologies like a screen reader, like a head pointer, etc., those things need that keyboard operation to be there. Next, you need to think about what you're doing with color. 1 in 12 men has some degree of color blindness. How many people here know that you have some degree of color blindness? Okay, so there's some of you that just have bad taste, but we'll move on. But only 1 in 200 women. That's my father. There was a running joke because my father would always put blue and green together, and he denied being colorblind. So my response to him was, "Okay, then you're just bad matching." I wanted to get him Garanimals, but they didn't have it for his size. And then lastly, we look at screen reader support. And the reason we focus on screen readers is that as a business, we can't possibly test all the different assistive technologies. But if we know you can do everything with a keyboard and you're working with the market-leading screen readers, your likelihood of working for whatever other assistive technology one of our customers has is much higher. We also use validation tools with caution, and I'm going to talk about some of the reasons for those cautions in a moment. But the other thing that you can't overestimate the value of is actually having people with disabilities to come in and perform usability testing. And what I have seen happen time and time again when we bring people into the usability lab is these people with disabilities uncover usability problems, things that aren't apparent until you see the difficulty that they have, and you go, oh, that really affects everyone. So that is a really key part. Now let's talk about some of the evaluation tools. There are automated checkers, but frankly, some of them are very good. They're very detailed. They let you choose the level of validation you want to perform. And some of them are very bad. They're very bad because they're misleading. They either don't pick up enough of the changes, or they give you many false positives, that things that you think are wrong and maybe they're not. And the ugliest aspect is the false impression that it gives you. I mentioned earlier that we had some difficulty selling something to public sector in Canada because we didn't pass a W3C validation. It had to do with the way we coded came up as invalid, and yet someone using a screen reader, someone using a keyboard could get through that. So there was false trust in the tool. You've always got to go back to, does it actually work for that sort of person? The other thing you must do is test with a variety of browsers and versions. We sell enterprise software. We have to work on IE. There's no way around it. However, because Firefox is a standards-based browser, we increasingly see our customers in general, and especially our customers with disabilities, using Firefox. And we know that we have to test across the versions. I mean, if you've ever done any coding, you know the fun of doing an IE-specific hack, and then, oh, they read the version, I got to redo my hack. So you've got to test that range. Fortunately, there are some free and very good browser plugins and toolbars that make it that are very helpful for determining whether or not your accessibility is there, and I'm going to show you some of that. And some of the tools have built-in support.
How many of y'all use the browser plugins, the developer toolbar?
Don't they rock? Let's talk a little bit about color. So when we talk about meeting accessibility needs for color, one thing we have to think about is foreground text color versus background color. If there's not enough contrast between those, anyone with low vision and those of us over 40 who are starting to squint at the screen are going to have a harder time determining that. But we also have to think about color difference. At SAS, we build a lot of business graphics. And if I've got a pie chart with a blue segment and a green segment next to it, about 10% of people are going to have trouble knowing that that's two separate segments. So you really do have to think about adjacent elements. And the best thing to do is provide sufficient choices within your application itself for people to meet different needs. And with that, I'd like to show you an example from the American Foundation for the Blind. Crossing my fingers that it actually gets there now. Because one of the things that AFB.org did is they built a set of color choices into it. They did CSS swapping on the back end. So it's looking like it's going to be really slow. I'll tell you what this is. There's a portion where you click on color choices, and it'll give you a series of drop-downs. One of them lets you set the zoom for anywhere from 100% to 200%, going up by 10s and 20s. And all it's doing is it's got variables in their CSS. So based on what you've set, it resets the variables, and it keeps that person's choices by setting a cookie. They can register, they can log in, and it keeps those. You can also set the foreground and background color. Some of my low vision employees actually use yellow with a navy background. That is something they can see more easily. The other thing you can do is you have a variety of fonts, because sometimes, depending on somebody's visual needs, they can see a serif font more easily than a sans serif font. So giving that choice as well. And I apologize for that, but it's AFB, Alpha Frank Beta .org, if you'd like to go see it. The other one I have is I decided to use something a little closer to home.
So we can't get online, is that the problem?
I got online and some of them aren't coming up. I loaded one. Okay. So I loaded these before, and I'm hoping they stay put. This is the University of Texas at Austin's main website. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that orange is one of their primary colors. And I'm from NC State, so everything's Wolfpack red. And one of the handiest little tools is developed by somebody who's actually going to be here at a core conversation tomorrow, Jez Lemon. Is he? Where's Jez?
He's in the middle.
Where's Jez hiding? There he is. This was one of the greatest things that I've used, because it's so simple. Even a developer can use it. I'm sorry. That's me talking as my tester self. And what I'll do is I need to amend that. Get over to here. Bring it back up. I had too much coffee. I'm shaking. Sorry. And what you can do is you use a little dropper and can get your foreground color. So I'm going to take this decorative text. And then I pluck the background color. Now here it gets a little tricky, because you've got pixels, and you have to figure out, okay, what's the main color that I'm going to sample by? And if you notice, there's a little green check down there, and it shows an example of the text contrast. It also tells me the results or the value. There's a checkbox for testing the results for color blindness. And what's neat there is you can actually see, depending on what type of color blindness someone has, how they see that white on orange. So for some people, that orange is actually going to appear more like an avocado. And so for that reason, it's very helpful. So a lot of this site does well. However, we've got decorative text up at the top. Now the decorative text up at the top doesn't change. Is it easy for someone to see? And then you have to ask yourself how important that text is. So this is a dark gray on white. And it does pass color blindness, but if somebody isn't colorblind, the contrast alone is insufficient. Now, one of the things that I like a lot here is there's a checkbox for display details. And the reason I find that so handy is that in the details, it will tell you what the target threshold difference is and what your current threshold is. The other thing that's very handy is I can choose to pick a slightly darker color from the drop-down and immediately see whether or not that provides enough difference. I find this very helpful, because I can capture that improvement, put it into my defect system, and say, can we darken this to this degree, and then it's going to pass. And so, oh, I'm at 3 minutes. So the color contrast analyzer is one of the handiest things that I use. Another one is... from the... One second. I just panicked. She said we have 3 minutes. I'm going, okay, is that for everybody or
no,
me?
No, just for you.
Oh, that's what I was like. I can't compress it that much. I panic easily. There's an accessibility toolbar that is available from, get back here, the Illinois Center for Information Technology. Does anybody here currently use that accessibility extension? It's very, very handy. And one of the things that I want to show you about it is something that Susan mentioned. She mentioned how important...
Louder, please.
Okay.
Well, they got scared when...
I know. They turned me down. Okay, so with using the accessibility extension, one of the things that I can do is view the headings on a page. Susan mentioned that headings are a good way to give her an overview of a page, and she knows how to move among them. If you're using a screen reader, you can type H to move heading to heading, so you can easily move among the sections. And I can tell by the levels being hierarchical and the text being there that they've actually thought about this. So it's good information architecture, but also as a developer, I can come here and go, oh yeah, all of that's getting picked up. Another handy thing that it's got is under text equivalents, since for all graphics, you have to provide a non-visual representation. So if I say list of objects, I can see very quickly, A, whether or not there's text to accompany my graphics, and B, whether or not that text is relevant. And that is a key part. I mentioned that automated checkers can only do so much. They can check to see whether or not there exists alternative text, but that doesn't mean that it's valuable. So imagine if you had an image that said, or you heard a description that said, two guys raise a flag. Okay. But what if you knew that that photo was actually a photo of the raising of the flag at Iwo Jima? That's one of those Time Life series photos that you can't, that's just not enough, right? So that's an example of where automated checker would go, good to go, and has somebody gotten that they have not received the information about it that they needed to. So those are two of the things that I find most helpful from this extension. And if you haven't used it, I strongly encourage you to use it. It's very, very handy. It is the Firefox Accessibility Extension, and it's available at the little I, capital C-I-T-A site. John Gunderson is the person who runs that.
I think it's also on the Mozilla site.
It probably is, yeah. Actually, if you go to the Mozilla site to look for extensions and add-ons and type accessibility into the search area, you'll find it there. You'll also find a couple other handy ones. Like there's one called Fangs. So there's JAWS, which is the screen reader, and then there's Fangs. And what Fangs does that's very handy is it emulates a screen reader. So you can get a quick idea of, without having to listen to it. And since I'm hard of hearing, it kind of limits how well I can test with a screen reader. So Fangs will actually give you a textual representation. So this is what a screen reader would have available to hear. And you notice there's blue parts here that's telling me the heading level 1, heading level 4. That gets announced and aids that navigation. I also mentioned that some of the tools have built-in support. How many people here use Dreamweaver? After Visual Notepad, Dreamweaver is my favorite authoring tool. And one of the things that's really great in Dreamweaver is that it has site-wide reports. And within those reports, there's an accessibility report and a missing alt text report. If you choose report settings, you can tune the settings to what things, in terms of accessibility, you want to check. Do you only care about 508? Do you also want to check for W3C? If you do, what level of W3C? And I'll wrap up with, this is sample Dreamweaver report output. For those of you who may not be able to see it from the back, what I'll tell you is that I knew that this was a solid page I ran this on, but yet there's whole list of things that are potential problems. They're all manual checks. That means these are things that no automated checker can tell me, yes, this is good, no, this is bad. So you really do, you do your work up front, but you've always got to validate on the back end. Oh, that was the one other thing. contrary to popular belief, yes, you can create accessible flash and webcasts and videocasts. Do I have time to show this?
Sure.
Okay. Cross our fingers. This is from NASA, and they have episodes for kids. I have a daughter who loves space and stars and stuff. And so there's this little bit of flash. It is. So when I pressed tab, it went to the closed captioning. And if when I pressed space bar to activate it, it starts showing my captions at the bottom, which is great. But suppose I'm somewhere that I really don't want to hear it out loud. Or what if I'm a non-native English speaker? I can click on the text version, and here's the full text version. Having that full text version available has the added benefit that if somebody's searching for something, that text can be parsed and they can find that information. We don't do it as well as this. However, at SAS, we do internal webcasts and e-learning, and we provide that sort of transcript in order that people like me who can't hear the speaker very well can still get the information, as well as my colleagues for whom English is a second language. With that, I'll just wrap up by saying here's some very important reasons why businesses care about accessible development. It is an easy way to improve usability for all users. You widen your potential audience, your market share. It's good for public opinion. And this is another area that a lot of people don't realize. It improves your scalability across devices. Accessible content can move to the third screen much more easily. And you decrease your litigation risk. How many people shop at Target? How many people shop at Target.com? Well, if you don't know, Target is currently embroiled in a class action lawsuit in the state of California because people with screen readers could not access weekly specials. It was the web equivalent of going into a brick and mortar store, you see the clearance rack, and you can't go there. They say, I'm sorry, the class of user you're not allowed to shop clearance. Well, you don't tell me that because I'm a clearance shopper. But that is exactly why they are under that kind of gun. And that is horrible publicity. And there are people that are boycotting them now because of it. So it does hit the bottom line. It does matter for business. Thank you.
Thank you. And I like to remind people that even though a lot of these problems seem pretty, they seem pretty formidable, the ways that we need to overcome to make these things accessible. But one thing that comforts me is the fact that there are some really smart people working on solving these problems, and Becky is one of them, and I'm so glad that she's here to show you what she's been working on and what we have to look forward to. So this is Becky Gibson.
Hi, thanks, Sharon. So as Sharon said earlier, my name is Becky Gibson. I work at IBM. I have the title right now. My focus is on web accessibility. I'm called a web accessibility architect, but I'm also my current project is working on the Dojo open source toolkit, where I'm a committer there and working to make their widget set fully accessible. So this is just an overview. We've already touched on most of these, so I'm not going to go over them. Rich accessible media is all about these exciting new interface controls, bringing our desktop paradigm to the web. There's a lot more reliance on the mouse. We have a lack of semantics in some of the HTML that we write today, and that we're creating these cool things like tree controls and editable combo boxes and tab panels, but there's no way to mark them up such that a screen reader or anything that's programmatically looking at the source code can know that you've created a tree control. And we, both Susan and Lisa mentioned our incremental updates via AJAX, which can be tough for the screen reader. We have changes in focus that if you are using AJAX to update something on the page and you think it's really important, and as a developer, you set focus there, well, some poor person that's using a screen magnifier and is looking at the upper left-hand corner of the page, which for you would be there, upper left-hand corner of the page, and you change the focus suddenly down to the right-hand corner, they're totally confused because they were looking somewhere else. They may have been reading slowly. And because you as a developer said, hey, they need to know the stock price just went up 10%, so I'm going to focus over there, there's a lot of navigation for them to get back to what they were doing. Our HTML elements have tab navigation via tab key, so you can tab through the through your page and go from link to link to link or from form control to form control. But when you start putting hundreds of links on the page, such as a news site or something like that, or you make up a tree control out of links, every time to get to each element in that tree control, you have to hit the tab key. And it's very tedious to navigate. We have mashups now, and everybody's creating these rich pieces of media that they want you to pull into your page and make a mashup of it. So now we're dealing with sources, different sources, and it's a paradigm shift. For all of us in this room, Web 2.0 is already old news. We're thinking about what's Web 3.0. But for people like my parents and people that are newer to the web or have that dial-up connection, they're still used to that paradigm of click, wait, get a new page, not click and have something happen over here. So it's a shift. And then we have the outdated accessibility standards. And I'm careful to say that, but you know, WCAG 1.0 is still the current standard, and it says you have to run with JavaScript turned off, which is really, yes, there's progressive enhancement, but when you're making these really dynamic sites, it's hard to think about how am I going to make this site work without JavaScript. I don't think it's possible in some cases. So, and so WCAG 2.0 is close to being completed, and that's great. It has a lot of improvements, and as well as the U.S. is working on updating our Section 508 standards to be more compatible with today's web. So what do we do about accessibility? Again, a little bit of an overview to what Lisa said. We need to provide full keyboard support. You need to be able to get to everything on the page using the keyboard. You can all test that. You can unplug your mouse, and believe me, you won't be happy until you have to learn a few keys. There's a little bit of learning to go on. But you can do that yourself. You can't say, well, QA didn't catch that on me. No, you can test that. Oh, I thought I got plugged in. This is bad. I need power. So, and then we have the low vision support. We need to support high contrast mode. And when people use CSS, and one of the things a lot of people don't know, so Windows has this built-in high contrast mode, and I'm going to show you that. But when you're using CSS background images, when you turn into this high contrast mode, those CSS background images get turned off. So if you have a cool toolbar, somebody that's running in high contrast mode because they need to reduce the number of colors, they don't see any of those images. They're gone. So you need to provide the text alternatives. You need to be able to resize. So when somebody resizes the fonts on their page through control plus or control minus, your page layout needs to be able to adapt to that. And then we have the assistive technology support with ARIA. And how many of you were in Sean Henry's talk this morning? Good. So we have a few. And so she mentioned, and Lisa also mentioned ARIA, Accessible Rich Internet Applications. And this is helping us to provide additional support to assistive technologies and also programmatic reach support, because we're adding, and so with that, we'll go into what is ARIA. It's being developed through the W3C, through the WAI, the Web Accessibility Initiative, WAI, part of W3C. And what we're doing is we're adding these role semantics into the scripted user interface elements. So when I use scripting to create a tree control, I can now identify that as a tree control. And I can say that what level in the tree a person is navigating and whether that tree is expanded or collapsed. I can identify something as a toolbar or a button. Button is already in HTML, but if I've created this cool drop-down button that has a menu, drop-down menu, I can now still identify that as a menu button. I can do the same with tab panels. Every new exciting web application and website has a tab panel, but to somebody that doesn't see that visual representation, they don't know that they can click on that link and the whole contents of their page just totally changed. So we can now tell them this is a tab panel. They can expect things to work in a certain way. One of the things IE55 did is they took the tab index attribute and they said that you could put a tab index attribute of 0 on any element on the page, and now we can get keyboard focus to that. I can now tab to that element. I can give it a -1 value, and I can programmatically set focus to that particular element. What that allows me to do is when I add the keyboard event handling, I can now use arrow keys to navigate my page. So that tree control, no longer do I have to make it completely out of links, and I have to tab to every element and press enter to expand, tab again to get to the next level, press enter to expand, press enter to collapse, I can actually implement that with the arrow keys. That makes it similar to our rich user interface that we have on the desktop. We can bring that to the web. And we want to mimic that behavior so people are familiar with the behavior, and it minimizes that tab key navigation. Think about going to a news site. Almost all of them have down on the left-hand side that whole list of links. And you have to, if you knew that was a navigation and you can mark that block as a navigation, you can now set up that navigation so I can arrow key down through it. And I can just tab to the navigation, say, okay, I want to navigate. And instead of hitting tab a gazillion times, I can either choose to stay in the navigation or I can hit tab again and maybe go to the main content section. So I use the arrow keys within a component, and then I tab between components. It makes my navigation much quicker and easier. We mentioned AJAX. So what's happening now in ARIA is they're adding what's called live region information and notification. So now when I've blocked up my site, maybe I have Flash playing over on the right and I have my navigation on the left, I can then... Sorry, I got the 10-minute warning, and I'm like, oh, no. But I'm almost to the demo, so that's good. We can now mark that up, and we can say, okay, this is a region. These are different regions. This is the navigation part of the page. This is my main content. This is my secondary area. And these regions update. And I can set a politeness level to how they update. If it's something that your battery is running out and you're going to be, that would not be on a web page, but I'm going to be logged out in a minute, I might want that to be marked as a rude interruption so that somebody knows that, okay, I better go do something or I'm going to lose my access to the site. And the screen reader would stop what it was doing and speak that immediately. Whereas if it was an updated stock quote and I just wanted to let somebody know, it's pretty important the stock went up 10%, but I can wait until the screen reader finishes its current sentence or its current task. So I could mark that as a polite interruption. So what we need to prove that this is doable. Did I have one more slide about where it was reported? No. So one of the things that we did is we said, okay, well, how many of you know what Dojo is? Okay, good. A fair amount of you. Dojo is an open source JavaScript toolkit. I'm giving you a really brief overview. It does lots of things, but it's meant to make AJAX easy. It's to help you build these dynamic, rich Web 2.0 applications. It has a whole data binding model. It's got a full event system. It takes care of all that nasty browser abstraction that Lisa mentioned. You know, so when I code to the Dojo API, and it handles whether I need to do attach event in IE or whatever the other one, the Firefox one is. I don't even remember anymore. It's just so wonderful. And it has a whole set of user interface widgets, and it's duly licensed. What we're going to look at next is the interface widgets. So what did we do to make the core widget set, which is called Digit, accessible? So what we did is myself and a team of other folks, we had some folks helping from the Adaptive Technology Resource Center at the University of Toronto, we said we're going to implement ARIA in the widget set. And the first thing we had to do was make them fully keyboard accessible, and that is in both Firefox and Internet Explorer, because we needed that support for tab index, which is not yet in Safari, which we would really like to see. And anybody can do that. We didn't have to have ARIA to do that. You can all do that today. You know how to do events. You know how to do keyboard. You can add keyboard handling. We made it screen reader accessible in Firefox using ARIA. All of the widgets work in the operating system high contrast mode. So, and this was a big issue because when I first started in Dojo, I told them that they had to use image elements for all their CSS background images. And they literally looked at me like I had six heads. Like, uh-oh, this person from IBM is coming and she's going to ruin everything. But I was like, so they said, we need CSS for the performance. That's what, you know, we can have one image download for our whole toolbar versus if you want me to do 16 images for a toolbar, forget it. Our performance is going to be awful. So we worked out a way that we can use CSS now to detect high contrast mode and turn on some CSS and have text alternatives in the code that are only displayed when we know we're in high contrast mode. We work with images off. We currently don't have support for drag and drop. That's coming now with the ARIA spec and in Firefox 3, so that's something that will be added. But we have things like context menus. So instead of using drag and drop on your tree control, you could pop up a context menu that said move items up or down a level. And so there is an alternative because we provided you an accessible context menu widget. So now if everything, the gods are here, we'll look at an example.
JAWS for Windows is ready. Freedom Scientific. Demo mail application - Mozilla Firefox. See demo. Use virtual PC cursor off.
So I need to be in this virtual key PC cursor off mode for the screen reader to work. So this is the dojo, and I'd love to be able to give you a public URL and say, here, go check out this accessible dojo site. But this is still new. It's still evolving. IBM is working on some sites that are built with Dojo that are that will be accessible, but they were at the Dojo 0.4 level, and we didn't get our accessibility to till 1.0 in November. So next time I speak, and there are other many applications that are built using Dojo, a lot of them are behind firewalls or are not publicly available. But my goal is by the next time I give a talk, I'll be able to show a public application running. So what this is it's a demo that you can get from the Dojo site. I'm running it locally because I know that the URL gods aren't always friendly when you're demoing. It's just a mail. It's meant to be a sample Gmail, Yahoo mail, AOL mail. We have our toolbar at the top. We have a tab panel, of which there's only one showing at this point. We have the split screen, so we're using our border container. We have the tree control on the left-hand side. And then on the right-hand side, we're using a split pane to show you an inbox and then a preview. So I'm going to tab through this.
Tab button to activate. Press space bar space to navigate. Press up or down arrow. Gmail submenu.
So you can see we had a combo button.
Yahoo submenu.
I'm using the arrow keys to navigate. I'm going to tab again.
Leave it tab. Demo mail. Oops, app and sorry. Shift tab button to activate. Press space bar. New alert. Click to compose new message. Click to compose new message.
So I'm in a toolbar. I use the right arrow key. I move to the new message. Notice we have a little what looks like a title tooltip. This is actually a Dojo tooltip, and it's displayed on focus, and it's spoken by the screen reader. Again, right now, when you put that title attribute on, the screen reader doesn't you get that, nor does the mouse, the keyboard user. So these are fully keyboard accessible and screen reader accessible. I'm going to tab to leave the toolbar.
Tab, demo mail application, inbox tab, to switch pages, press control tab.
I'm told I'm in a tab panel. I know how to switch. I can use control tab or control shift tab, control page up, control page down to go through tabs. I'm going to tab again.
Tab, folders tab, to switch pages, press control tab.
It tells me it's a tab because there isn't a role that says this is an accordion container, but it behaves like a tab. So a screen reader user doesn't necessarily need to know that it's an accordion panel that's vertical rather than horizontal. And if I hit the down arrow key.
Address book tab to switch pages, press control tab.
I get that I move to the address book. That becomes the active tab. I'm going to tab
folders
up.
Tab to switch pages, press control tab.
Sorry, arrow up. I'm going to tab into
tab,
this.
Tab, preview, level one, folders open.
Tree view, level one, folders, open. And if you're a screen reader user, that's key. I suddenly know I'm in a tree. I'm in the item called folders, and it's open. I can use the arrow keys now to navigate. I'm going to go down three times just to speed this up.
Inbox, trash, save, closed, 3 of 3.
Told me where I am. I'm on save. It's closed. If it tells me it's closed, I can probably open it, so I can hit the right arrow.
Save, open.
Navigate through that. I'm going to shift tab quickly back up to our toolbar.
Shift tab, toolbar, new alert. Click to compose new message. Enter. 133%.
So I created a new message. I'm going to tab down.
Tab, demo mail application, new message number one tab. To switch pages, press control tab.
I know I'm in a tab. I can left arrow.
125%. Inbox tab.
I'm on the
pages.
Inbox tab.
New
go back to the new message.
One tab.
Tab down.
New message number one. To pull an edit combo. To set the value, use the arrow keys or type the value.
I know this is an edit combo, so now I can enter information. I'm going to hit the down arrow to get my options. Here's where I'm running on the Mac via Parallels, and believe me, really, on my Windows machine, the screen reader reads as I go down through these. It will read Adam at Yahoo, Barry at Yahoo, Bob. I'm trying to figure that out so I can continue working on the Mac. But I'm going to pick Bob. I'm going to go to
subject colon edit combo. To
if
set
I type
the value,
a V,
use the
I know
arrow keys or type the value V.
I know vacation was on the list. The Dojo widget gives me the autocomplete. As I said, on my true Windows machine, the screen reader speaks this. I'm going to
tab toolbar demo mail application dash Mozilla Firefox demo mail application paste button to activate. Press space bar.
I know I'm in a toolbar. It told me toolbar. I can now arrow through
bold
these to pick something.
Italic button, bold button.
I'm going to tab into the
area.
Rich text editor. Select the text.
Exclaim.
I need a vacation. Now, a screen reader user probably isn't going to be that excited about making things bold or colored, but I'm just to show you that the keyboard works. I'm going to select vacation or more.
Selected.
I'm going to shift tab back to my toolbar.
Shift tab, demo mail application, cut, copy, paste, bold button.
Arrow to the button, pick
enter,
bold,
edit area.
You get bold.
Tab,
I can tab through.
Tab, send, enter, 114%. Send this. Demo mail application, progress bar.
And this is key. I mean, it brings up, there's still the issue that Susan brought up, is that it's confusing. I sort of know the layout because I can see it. And it would still be confusing for a first-time user as a screen reader to come in and figure out this layout. And there's things that we will be doing and can do with that live region so that we can mark each of these regions of the page so the screen reader could get that overview. And that's an emerging technology. That's the group that I work in IBM, because we need the screen readers to sort of catch up. We need the ARIA spec to get finished and what's happening. So as I said, as time goes on, but you can start putting ARIA in your applications now. It's supported. And if you use toolkits like Dojo that build it in, you get the accessibility of the widgets for free. And the other toolkits are looking at supporting ARIA as well. I know jQuery has looked at it very seriously.
JAWS.
I'm going to turn off JAWS.
JAWS context meant leaving
just menus. To give you a quick overview of high contrast mode. And if you guys want to start, maybe.
Well, I was going to say we're officially at the end of our time. So those of you who need to leave, you know, feel free to do that if you have meet somebody for lunch or whatever. But we'll stay and answer questions for anybody who wants questions. And Oh, and please fill out your evals. But we'll stick around to answer questions for anybody who wants to hear them and keep looking at the high contrast mode. And thanks very much for coming.
So this is where we're really...
The evals go to the people at the door. She just asked me to ask that. And also, please come by the Nobility booth. These guys will be hanging out there, and they can answer questions there as well.
Okay. Sorry. Here's where we're really proud of our supporting. I mean, that toolbar was done using CSS background images, but we detect the high contrast. We put in the textual equivalents. Yeah, it doesn't look quite as pretty. It's got a wrap a little bit, but you do get the information. You can use it. We can see which tab is the active one, the new message one. We use a different border. It's very hard because high contrast mode removes your colors and it removes those background images. So you really have, you know, that little icon for closing is now an X character instead of a CSS background image. So you can, you know, these things are all possible. You can all do them. You can build them in. We can build these exciting, you know, again, this is a static demo, but think of, you know, your Yahoo Mail, your Gmail, your AOL Mail, your all the different mail products that incorporate so much more. You can now put, you know, you can send Flash or you can have sections of your page. You can put your YouTube videos in, and we can really make those more accessible to everyone.
So did anyone want to ask questions of Becky about the work they're doing? Or yeah.
Do you want to take that one? I used to be on WK. I'm not as much, and I think Sean's probably a better person to address that as a W3C representative.
Yeah. Do you want to address it, Sean, or? Well, I would say beyond that, just look at WCAG 2.0 where it is right now. I mean, it's boiled everything down to four basic principles. It says you want your applications to be perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust. And then all the detail is organized under that. But those four organizing principles, to me, are just splendid. And it's really helpful to think about it in that way. I'm trying to meet these four very straightforward, very simple principles. And the supporting underneath, you know, that's changeable because the technology changes.
It's technology agnostic, which is what...
I think it's splendid. That's my comment about it. I think it's great. And I haven't seen the recent Samurai stuff, and I would be interested to see because, you know, Joe Clark's a smart guy. But I'm so happy with the way WCAG 2.0 has evolved, and it's now in second candidate draft, or what is it called?
Second last call working draft.
Is there a question in the back?
Yes, I don't know a lot about Tapestry. I mean, right now I know Dojo is really the only open source toolkit that's doing it. But as I said, the other ones are looking at it, at Aria as well. And there is a panel on Tuesday talking about JavaScript toolkits. I think it's on Tuesday. So that would be a great place to ask
that question. Oh, that would be a great place to ask that question.
Yeah, actually, also Monday at 5 o'clock in Baltimore City, there's an accessibility litigation outfit.
Uh-huh. Any other questions? Well, I don't think it's so much. I think there's more convergence every year. It seems like at this conference is one place where a lot of bridges were built between the accessibility advocates and the standards, you know, standardista, people who care about web standards and care about communicating across all barriers, not just disability barriers, but devices and bandwidth and all those things. I think that that those common concerns really do bring people together. And you don't want your message only to be available to a small group. I mean, most people don't. I guess some do.
Well, and I'll readily admit that my soapbox has a ramp. Okay, I am very passionate about accessibility, but I've also stood toe-to-toe with a product manager who said, I don't care about screen reader users. And I said, that's well and good. Do you care about automated testing? Because we have to crank so much software, so many regressions through our testing group that automated testing is absolutely essential. Well, here's the cool thing. If you make your software, be it Java clients or desktop clients or web clients accessible, those accessibility testing engines need to know the identity, the state, the properties, the interaction aspects of all of those widgets. And so Mr. Product Manager, whose car I keyed, he suddenly cared about accessibility because he could get the automated testing done. And that's how I've managed to sell it, is for those other aspects.
And Susan has a comment too.
Yeah, I have a soapbox also, which is that the screen reader dependence should actually be considered to be a harmful activity, because I mentioned text-to-speech is a much broader technology. You've got sappy engines and things in your operating system. You've got voices that are commodity data files that you can buy. I think all applications should accept the responsibility to be self-voicing. That would be much more versatile, because you just think of having a voice channel as well as your GUI channel. Right now, you're trying to make the screen readers read from the application down through into the operating system, and I think that's just the wrong architecture to continue to build on exclusively. I'd like to see more self-voicing applications being developed. And one reason is economic. Becky said something about the screen reader vendors catch up. But who's funding the screen reader vendors? It's not the government, and it's not grants. It's upgrades that go back to rehab organizations and to developers, which keeps the price high. So there's a problem here. It's a very fragile industry, and it's pricing people out worldwide if you try to put all the burden on just a few screen reader vendors. So I think people ought to try to find that speech channel and make their accept the responsibility and make their applications and their web pages self-voicing.
Hey, Becky, are you here? Did you say you're here through Tuesday?
Yep.
Is there a day or time when you can say that you'll be at the booth to do more demos and to talk to people about the, you know, the
sure,
specific...
Sure, just tell me when you want me.
Well, it's there all the time. So, I mean, it's going to be open from now on. So,
okay.
Because I think there are people who would really like to see more detail about that.
So you want
to... So maybe we can just post it to the blog or you can say right now when's a good time.
Well, I haven't looked at the schedule, so I don't want to, you know, you want me to do a lunchtime? Is that a good time?
Lunchtime is a good time because there aren't any panels. And
okay,
I think lunch runs 11:30 to 1 every day, right?
Right, so I can...
12:30 to 2. 12:30 to 2 every
right.
day.
Right, so maybe Sunday and Monday I can be there.
Sunday and Monday over lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Another question?
We have to go. It's going to, I mean, performance is the big issue I got pushed back from Dojo on, right? Because with your CSS, things like a toolbar, you can do one URL hit to get the whole toolbar. Or for when we did our checkbox, we used like 6 images to get the different look and feel of the checkbox, checked, unchecked, disabled, enabled. And we could do that as one image. And when if you're having a lot of that on the page for your widgets and your UI, you don't want that hit. So that was why we had to go with that. I mean, it's a little bit more work because there's more code, because now I have to create a span that represents the text alternative for that. I have to hide it. I have to detect the high contrast mode. I have to now show that text. So there's some more text going down over the wire, but I also don't have to do, you know, the alt text on my images. So it's sort of a trade-up as to what
you're
doing.
There was a question over here, and then we'll get to yours.
I think they want us to go.
But... I know. We'll
okay.
go after these two questions.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm right there with you. Exactly. Yep.
And then you? No, you had another comment?
Oh, putting things off screen, right. I mean, that the off screen works. The display none you have to be careful of, because the screen reader, a lot of people would put text in that they want read and say display none and leave it display none. And the screen reader, except for label elements, generally honors display none. If you say display none, it's not going to. So, but the moving things off screen, if you can do that as well, because the screen readers will. The only problem is if you turn CSS off, those come back.
So let's keep the conversation going. Come by the booth, the Nobility booth, and we'll see you around. I'm sorry? I think they open tomorrow at the booths. Does anybody know when the booths open?
Something at noon. I thought at noon. But
at noon today?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. They open at noon today, and they're open from, 10 to 6 every 10 to 6 the rest of the time. Okay. Thanks again. Thanks so much for coming.